Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Day after the election. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Pretty interesting night, to say the least. And I think the takeaway is Joe Biden will probably become the next president of the United States. At least that's my take on it. The Senate will very importantly stay in Republican hands. And the Republicans, I think, pick up seats in the House. So what does all that mean? I think what it means is I think the biggest demographic shift that I saw was women who had voted for Donald Trump in 2016 got simply tired of his ass and said, he's an asshole, I'm not voting for him. And so, again, all of the things being equal, and happened the way they happened, I think that is the difference. So what does that mean? So I think what it means is if you, let's just say you had that Donald Trump wasn't the asshole that he is. I think he'd be the president. The Republicans would have held on to their majority in the Senate. And then when you look across the nation at the money that was dumped into states like Texas, states like Georgia, you know, by liberal organizations, I think if you're a conservative, you look around and you're like, hey, we just went through COVID. We have, you know, the human blowtorch and his Twitter account, like pissing everybody off on a daily basis. And, you know, we're going to go to, you know, down to the wire for the presidency, and we're going to hold the Senate. That's not a bad night, I think, right? I mean, that's my take anyway, if you're a conservative. And so, so interesting what ifs. So Joe Biden, right? How does Joe Biden govern if he doesn't have a Democratic Senate? Right, his support from the Bernie Bros, from AOC. How do they get any of those programs through? The answer is they won't. Okay, they will not get any of those programs through. So the Democratic Party is going to get into a no pun intended, a blue on blue fratricide event where they're going to get after each other. And it will start with cabinet appointees, you know, and so stand by. And so I think financially, if you look at the markets like divided governing. Okay. Why? Because that means nothing's gonna happen. Right? Nothing's gonna happen. You know, like I always say, you can move from north, you can move north-northeast, and you can move north-northwest. Now, for those of you who don't own a compass and aren't familiar with those directions, okay, so draw your compass, right? The N goes at the top. The S goes on the bottom, okay? The E goes on the right, and the W goes on the left. Okay, now draw at a 45-degree angle, a line between the N and the W, and then the N and the E. So you have two 45-degree lines now. Okay, so label the line, the 45-degree line between the N and the E, label that NE, okay? And then the one between the N and the W, label that NW. So you see northwest and northeast. Now draw another line between the northeast line and the north line, and do the same thing between the northwest line and the north line. That is north of northeast to the right of the N, and that is north northwest to the left of the N. So that's as far as the country goes, and the market's like that. The market's like that. The but we wait. We wait. And so what we saw unfold last night are, and we got warned, right? You're going to see in a lot of states, you're going to see this, depending on when they count their mail-in votes and things like that, you're going to see if they count them early as they get them, you're going to see a blue mirage to start. And then you're going to see the election day results come in. And that kind of ran true to form all night. And then you have, for whatever reason, you have these large Democratic cities that can't count votes. I don't know why. They were Milwaukee in Wisconsin, right? Detroit in Michigan, and in Pennsylvania, stuck on 65%. Of the vote. And then, you know, and then in Georgia, Georgia supposedly had something to do with the break of a water main, and God only knows. So you had all of a sudden that stopped, and you had in Pennsylvania, the president had a 600,000 vote lead. Right. And so, and they're going around to different counties and say, how does somebody make this up? Right. And then we wake up and we find out that Joe Biden has now a 10,000 vote lead in Wisconsin with 99% of the vote counted. And so all of a sudden all these states flip. So this morning, because I seek diversity in that which I read, I subscribe to Glenn Greenwald, who's a liberal who just resigned from a website he started called The Intercept, right? You've heard me talk about him before, right? He writes this. The headline is, "The U.S. inability to count votes is a national disgrace and dangerous." Subheadline, "Nations far poorer and less technologically advanced have no problem holding quick, efficient elections. Distrust in the U.S. outcomes is dangerous, but rational." So the article starts like this. The richest and most powerful country on the earth, whether due to ineptitude, choice, or some combination of both, has no ability to perform the simple task of counting votes in a minimally efficient or confidence-inspiring manner. As a result, the credibility of the voting process is severely impaired, and any residual authority the U.S. claims to spread democracy to lucky recipients of its benevolence around the world is close to being obliterated. At 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, the day after the 2020 presidential elections, the result of the presidential race, as well as control of the Senate, are very much in doubt and in chaos. Watched by the rest of the world, deeply affected by those who rule the still imperialistic superpower, the U.S. struggles and stumbles and staggers to engage in a simple task mastered by countless other less powerful and poorer countries, counting votes. Some states are not expected to finish their vote counting until the end of this week or beyond. So he goes in to talk about some of the predictive models and things like that. And he ends with this. Hundreds of millions of Americans went to bed on Tuesday's election night seeing Trump in the lead in key states, with the data experts of major outlets indicating that his victory in many of those states was highly likely. They woke up to the opposite indication, that Biden is now a slight favorite to win. But what is clear is that it will be days, if not longer, before the votes are fully counted, and judicial proceedings almost certain to prolong the outcomes even further. No matter what the final result, there will be substantial doubts about this legitimacy by one side or the other, perhaps both. And no deranged conspiracy thinking is required for that. An electoral system suffused with this much chaos, error, protracted outcomes, and seemingly inexplicable reversals will sow doubt and distrust even among the most rational citizens. The next time Americans hear from their government that they need to impose democracy in other countries through wars, invasions, bombing campaigns, or other forms of clandestine CIA interference, they should insist that democracy first be imposed in the United States. An already frazzled, intensely polarized, and increasingly hostile population now has to confront yet another election in the richest and most technologically advanced country on earth, where the votes cannot even be counted in a way that inspires even a minimal degree of confidence. My analysis of the election itself and the ongoing systemic failure of the Democratic Party, no matter the outcome, will be posted later today. You can find that, I believe, at glenngreenwald.com. I'm on the free list, just so you know. You could look him up. Again, he's liberal. But confidence in the system. How do you have it, and how do you not be able, with all the predictions that were made about record voter turnout, how do you not, you know, create the infrastructure that's going to be required to be able to digest this? Right. And just know that, right, states govern voting in their state. And the voting system needs to inspire confidence. And as Greenwald quite rightly points out, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to cast a jaundiced eye at what happened last night, right? And wait till we begin to read the stories of the mail-in ballots, right? Wait till that. So an exciting, interesting night last night, and we shall see. I do not envy Joe Biden. Joe Biden sits atop a coalition that includes Bernie Sanders, AOC, and then rank and file Democrats. How does Joe Biden govern? Well, many say it's the Senate being in Republican hands is a great is of great relief to Joe Biden if he's elected. Why is that? Because the Republican Senate rescues him from the progressive deals that he's had to cut. He'll just look at him and say, "We'll never get through the Senate." Do you want me to issue that in an executive order? So again, the blue-on-blue firefight that is going to occur in the Democratic Party should Joe Biden become the president, it's going to be something to behold, all right? Something to behold. So, I mean, to me, a very mixed bag for both parties. For the Democrats, did not, you know, with all the money and with the billions of dollars they spent for votes, did not gain traction across the nation. This election wasn't supposed to be like it turned out to be. So as you sat there and watched it throughout the course of the night, you're like, holy shit, man. Holy shit. And the other thing is, and I've been saying this for years, and because I've lived it. And when I lived in North Dakota, you could see, and you know, having come from California, move up there, the values of small town America and rural America are not the values and the perspective of big city America. The values of big city America is the government needs to solve my problem. The government's got a program for daycare. The government's got, you know, something to do, and they've got to do this for me, right? And in rural America, I take care of me. And that's their attitude. It's on us to do. And I think when you look at the map, you can see that. You have islands of, you know, big city liberal places, and then you have the rest of the state is red. Small town people. And so that's the divide. And I've said this for a long time. The divide is not racial in this country. People will try to sell that bullshit. But the United States doesn't have a race issue. And if you watch Shelby Steele's documentary, he'll tell you what race is used for. Race is used to gain power. The alliance between this group and Black America. And then what happened? All kinds of promises get made, and then who's left holding the bag? Black Americans. Right? The union was designed to be a power grab, because that's what's going to solve your problems, instead of, right, the Black community looking inward and a broader conversation that looks at them and says, the only person that can solve your problem well is you. You want the best, you want the optimum solution? Solve your own problem. right? Pack your shit up and move to another city. Go to a city that's hiring. Go to a city that needs workers. Get the fuck out of here. Get out of this inner city shit and go get a job and go get a second job and slowly but surely save your money and do good things. But we don't want to have that conversation. We don't want to have that conversation. So to me, but if you're the Democrats, what you would say is didn't really go how we thought it would go. The blue wave, you know, and all the rest of that stuff. But if Joe Biden wins, we did win the presidency, and so we'll take that. And we'll see you in 2 years. And then it will be governing the nation will be on them, and we will see where it goes. We will see where it goes. If you're the Republicans again, what I would say is, hey, look, man. Were it not for Donald Trump's personality, he would have got reelected. The policies, you know, are what the nation, you know, embraced, and they came out to vote. So, yeah. So we shall see. We shall see. I got a couple emails here. I was up till 3 in the morning watching the shit show. I'm fairly pessimistic right now. He's a Trump supporter. At least the Senate stayed red, so Biden can take pictures for 4 years, but nothing crazy should get passed. Hopefully the defense revitalization, especially the Navy part, maintains its momentum. Stay the fuck out of my 401k. And so I wrote back. I was up till 1:30 Pacific time watching, right? I was awake till 1:30 watching. If Nikki Haley was our candidate, we would have won the presidency. So it sets up 2024. Keeping the Senate was the most critical event of the night, in my humble opinion. And then I got this back. Nikki will get resistance from the mouth breather coalition. A lot of MAGA types call her a rhino, Republican name only, and a neocon. I don't get it. She was great for South Carolina and brought a lot of industry jobs to the state. She was great at the UN. She's smart and she can think on her feet. I don't know if you noticed, but she spent the last couple of weeks traveling the country doing campaign events with lots of Republican senators that squeaked out their seats, paying the dues and making friends, which will come in handy when she steps up. She's a smart lady. Yeah, I say run two women. Kristi Noem, the governor of South Carolina, or run Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina. Did I say South Carolina? South Dakota is Kristi Noem. Run two of those three, right? And Nikki Haley. And to me, you know, if you telescope the vote forward, I don't know that America wants to move left. To me, it doesn't seem like that was one of the messages last night. America, you know, if you look at Kenosha, Wisconsin, that voted for Hillary Clinton last time, I think, overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump. Well, Kenosha was the site of a bunch of riots. So if you're looking for lessons learned, it would be law and order is something that concerns a lot of Americans, and they turned out to vote for it. But again, the other question is the polling and the media. For the second straight national election, not even coming close to the outcome. And so what that leaves you with is an American media that has no credibility, right? Has no credibility. And so it's simply a propaganda arm. Is that what you call it? So if you have no credibility, you know, what is left? So that'll be an interesting discussion, and we'll see how the news networks frame themselves and whatnot. But throughout the course of the evening, as you were watching it, you're like, holy shit, man, it happened again. And supposedly it wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. Today we're going to talk to the editor and publisher of Marine Corps Gazette, and that is retired Colonel Chris Woodbridge, and we'll get his thoughts on the election. So you don't want to miss that. We'll talk to him in about 35 minutes, and then tomorrow we'll get the Mensa brothers on. And so don't touch that dial. Anything that happens, I've got a monitor on. I'll scream about it. And so good morning to you on the day after the election. To all of you who voted, congratulations. My opinion is Memorial Day and Veterans Day are both embodied in Election Day. It's an expensive right. Not everybody on the planet has it. And so I hope you voted. As somebody who's spent 3 years of my life in another country, fighting for this country, watching people make the ultimate sacrifice for this country, it's an expensive right. So I hope you voted. If you didn't, I hope you really give some thought to next time participating in the democratic process. It's a privilege as an American, but I will say this. I mean, I don't know how a county, this goes the way we do elections, how a county is not in position to service the voters that live in the county. How that after the polls close within several hours, right, and you've been counting ballots all day, you know, putting them through machines and whatnot, how you can't get this done. And I think it's something to go back to Glenn Greenwald's comment. You know, I think there's a credibility issue relative to election. And I think that, you know, when you can't count the votes of the people in your county, you know, if the polls close at 8, you know, if in 4 hours you can't count them, then you got to come up with a new system. You've got to change the laws. Because I think this, and we're not talking about recounts. We're talking about just a singular counting of the votes. I think that's no bueno. I think that's not good. So, I always believe that. Election Day is a combination of Veterans Day and Memorial Day. And so you should participate. And the other thing is, you know, states like, I mean, last night you saw it just come to a stop, and they were all Democratic cities. And again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it looks pretty odd, right? That's what happened, that they couldn't report. And hours later, when they do report, it all skews the other way. So, I mean, I think you're going to see what I hope we see is, you know, more election reform. I mean, I voted and I was actually impressed with the system, and it's a system that I think ought to be in place. It was a piece of paper, right? that I was given that had my data on it, and then I blackened in the boxes. And then I took it and I put it through the scanner, and my vote was counted on Monday. I mean, that's not hard, is it? I don't think so. So, I'm just, it's a head scratcher to me how and again, I'm not, North Carolina, the issue evidently was mail-in ballots. So we don't have a system where we're tabulating mail-in ballots. Or some of the states say you can't count them until election day. So I hope we look at laws like that that allow us to give the American people, you know, the outcome of an election on election day. And again, if there's got to be recounts and things like that, so be it. But we ought to be able to in this, as Greenwald says, right? We ought to be able in this democracy, this technologically evolved democracy, to count the ballots, right? Collect that information and announce a winner, the tie, you know, or, you know, the very close results, and then say, yeah, we're in the process of a recount right now. But we ought to be able to come up with something, because I think what you're watching invites, you know, well, let me tell you know, there's going to be a fair number of the population that will not accept either candidate as a quote unquote legitimate winner. And that's not good. That's not good. So good morning to you here on this Wednesday. Chris Woodbridge will join me in about 27 minutes. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning. Dedicated to everybody who voted yesterday, congratulations. This is how we do it. And then in the aftermath of an election, in theory, what we do is we put the election results behind us. We then work to do together to do the work of the American people. We'll see if that happens. So this is dedicated to that proposition. If you voted, congratulations. We'll continue to watch as these numbers get updated. But whatever the outcome, the important work of the American people comes next. And hopefully, grown-ups, although I have no confidence in this statement, hopefully they'll grow the moral courage to compromise and do what's in the best interest of the American people. And this is dedicated to that proposition.
Oh. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. In Quantico, where Chris Woodbridge is, it is sunny in 59. In down the coast of Camp Lejeune, sunny in 67. Marine Corps Base, 29 Palms, sunny in 72. Camp Pendleton, partly sunny, 63. Camp Smith in Hawaii, cloudy in 76. Okinawa, dark cloudy, 71. Down under in Darwin, the home of Marine Rotational Force Darwin, in case you wonder why we do Darwin, it is dark cloudy in 83. In Oslo, which is in Norway. There's also an Oslo in Minnesota. I know that kind of shit. Clear, dark, and 44. That is a look at your weather. Oslo has 3 weather alerts, so we have to look into that. Hold on a second. It is clear in 44. They have flood warnings. 1, disruption due to flood for today, disruption due to flood for tomorrow, and a potential disruption due to wind on Thursday. So, yeah, Norway, not so much. Currently, your home of Almarine Radio, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area, sunny in 62. Looking for a high today of 79 degrees, so it ought to be beautiful here. 86 tomorrow? 70 on Friday, rain in 62 on Saturday, rain in 61 on Sunday? What happened? We go to 86 tomorrow and then 70? All right, I got it. All right, we'll take a break on this day after Election Day. So, I told you the sun would come up. Life will go on. And this democracy will continue. So don't touch that dial. More of Almarine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis But sometimes, reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, Reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You know, you have to admit that ID that Colleen does, that's high quality stuff, man. She's probably like 15 when she did that. It's a tribute to what you could accomplish if you force your kid to do something till they get it right. Alright, we'll check some headlines. Somebody sent me an email. There is no other headline today, Mac. Well, we'll at least go check them out. Top story in Stars and Stripes is presidency hinges on tight races in battleground states. Other headlines. Democrats losing paths to Senate control as the GOP hangs on. Another headline, Montana goes red. Another headline, push to relax drug laws gains big victories on state ballots. Yeah, mushrooms got legalized in places. Marijuana, recreational use of marijuana got legalized. I mean, I've not seen too many law enforcement stories. I have not seen too many organized crime stories, although I know that's part of the story of it. So drugs legalized across the country. Yeah. Next headline is Stars and Stripes. U.S. trained Iraqi counterterrorism force captures ISIS child recruiter in independent operation. Anytime they execute independent operations, it's like, yeah, good on them, man. They've learned. So those guys do pretty good work. They've been mentored for almost close to 15 years since we initially stood organizations like that up. Here's an interesting kind of headline. Athletic wear now allowed at the base commissaries and exchanges, according to the Secretary of Defense. It's now okay to wear spandex while running errands on base, apparently. On Monday, Secretary of what? On Monday, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper immediately authorized physical fitness attire for wear by patrons at commissaries and military exchanges at DOD installations. The policy changes include service members, spouses, and children. Well, I have to tell you this. It would be news to most spouses to be told that you can't wear that here. I don't know. And your kids? Service secretaries may make exceptions to the policy for service members based on mission requirements, blah, 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 blah. Quote, probably one of the least enforced rules ever, been doing it for years and didn't even know it was against the rules, somebody from the Air Force posted. Let's see. Civilians at Marine Corps Base Hawaii, meanwhile, may wear appropriate athletic gear inside base facilities. I don't like. In an order dating back to 2010 at Camp Pendleton, California, authorizes spandex only while conducting physical training, provided that the fit of such attire is not indecent or in poor taste. What the hell? Oh, man. Can't make it up, man. So, Mark Esper on his JOB. Congratulations to him. The Navy has authorized easier to recognize rank insignia for camouflage uniforms. Now this is no small deal, okay? Because, you know, I'll tell you what, the Marine Corps has this issue with senior enlisted rank insignia. Yeah. So you see, right, you're older or younger, we've got digital camouflage on. If you're wearing your greens, you got black. Normally some of that black goes behind the flat black rank insignia. You have no idea what rank that person is, unless you know them. None. So I used to make a joke out of it. How you doing, motivator? And they would start laughing, right? So you're walking, they're walking, and you know, like, Master Gunnery Sergeant, right? Sergeant Major, First Sergeant, I can't tell, right? And, you know, you're walking by, they salute, morning, sir. What's going on, motivator? And they start laughing, right? And they look at you. I'm like, fuck, I can't tell what rank you are. And they're like, nobody can. He said, I get called every rank. What's up, Gunny? What's up, First Sergeant? What's up, Master Guns? He said, I just keep walking. I don't even fucking slow down anymore. So the Navy, in their utilities, has this little tab right at their sternum. And they have the same problem. Right? They now are going to put a black... it looks like the old arm rank insignia that the Navy uses, right? Red chevrons and a kind of an eagle. And that version of the rank insignia, and on a black field, so the eagle is silver, the rank insignia red, and on a black field, and that tab goes around that little thing in your sternum. That's the Navy uniform story. A lot of heavy news today. The kin of man in black leads Marines in island assault during keen sword drills in Japan. A Marine who says he is the great-grandnephew of country music legend Johnny Cash recently led a force that stormed an island alongside troops from Japan's new amphibious brigade. Like, how does this story even happen? Hi, I'm Johnny Cash's grandson. Hi, I'm Johnny Cash. First Lieutenant Justice Cash, 21. First Lieutenant's 21 years old? I guess. The Marines from the Hawaii-based 1st Platoon Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 3rd Marine, were led by 1st Lieutenant Justice Cash. Hi, I'm Justice Cash. Spoke to Stars and Stripes in a phone interview. So, congratulations. All right. A little bit of trivia. I already talked to you about what food you can get for free on Veterans Day, so I hope you wrote that down yesterday. If you didn't hear it, go to the last part of the hour one yesterday, and I do a complete rundown of all the places you can glom a free meal if you're into that kind of shit. Yep. Yep. So that in the news. From the Wall Street Journal, right? Big day for the Wall Street Journal. Top headline, battleground states take focus as vote counting continues. Strong potential for legal action hangs over the race. Let me rewrite that. The certainty of legal action hangs over this race, no matter who wins. So, as of right now, Joe Biden, 238 electoral votes. Donald Trump, 213. Pennsylvania, Donald Trump, 53.9%. Joe Biden, 44.9%. With, again, 64% of the state of Pennsylvania. What the fuck? I mean, nothing but a bunch of rubes up in Pennsylvania? In Michigan, where Trump held a substantial lead when everybody went to bed. Joe Biden, 49.5%. Donald Trump, 48.9%. Total votes, they're separated by, 33,000 votes. 33,000 votes. In Michigan. In Wisconsin, 95 of the expected total vote reporting, Joe Biden has a 21,000 vote lead. The path to victory for Donald Trump goes through Georgia. Georgia has 94% of its precincts having reported. Donald Trump has a 100,000 vote lead, which is about 2.2% of the vote in Georgia. North Carolina, Donald Trump has about an 85,000 vote lead in North Carolina with 94% of the vote in. And in Pennsylvania, with just 64% of the vote in, he has got a 500,000 vote, a 500,000 vote lead in Pennsylvania. So what, Georgia, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, I still don't think get the president there. So, anyway. The markets like it, though, right? What are the markets like? They like stability. So split government is what the market's like. So So that in the news. So the NASDAQ Composite, Standard & Poor's Index, all doing well this morning. So congratulations to you and your 401k. Some ballot measures from across the country. Oregon decriminalizes all drugs. Yeah. Congratulations. New Jersey legalizes recreational marijuana. California passes Proposition 22, which exempts Uber and Lyft from reclassifying drivers as employees, and they can keep them as individual contractors. Now, the significance of that is they don't have to provide insurance, all the other things that we have required licensed cab companies and transportation companies. And I think that's wrong. So Yellow Cab has to meet all these requirements to maintain a license and operate in the city. But if you sign up for Uber, you don't have to face any of that to be a driver. Now, I don't doubt that it's a great, you know, minimal impact, easy way to make money. But how is that a level playing field? How is that a level playing field? And then you have requirements for cab companies that if they're going to operate and be licensed in the city, they've got to operate, you know, they've got to cover the whole city. They've got to do this. They've got to do that. They've got to provide these benefits. So interesting stuff. So that from the Wall Street Journal. Anything from the opinion page that I would? No. I would tell you, to me, America's not divided, in my opinion, racially. There's people that are trying to convince you of that. Sorry. Right? We might have a black woman be the vice president of the United States. Not even an issue in this country. Okay? So, you know, but that is a narrative that is dominating our nation. Right? Microaggressions, you know, your unconscious bias. And again, at some point, white people need to stop trying to prove they're not racist. And our honest conversation about race in this country has to start with, look, 50 years after Dr. King, 50 plus years, what we've done is we've created huge urban ghettos in this country, and much of those ghettos, much of those ghettos, you don't hear that phrase used often, are populated by black Americans. There's only one person that gets you out. If you're waiting for the government to rescue you, not going to happen. Just ask people that are there. The remedy for you is you. The remedy for your children is to keep them in school, maintain your family, teach them discipline, teach them hard work, and let them work their way out of that. The first thing, if I was going to give you advice, I'd say in some way, shape, or form, whatever you have to do to scrape up the money, get out of that place. Go to small town America. Get in a program where you can find somebody that will sponsor you. Move your family there, get your kids in a better school, go there, get a job, get a second job, and work your ass off. And there's churches across the country that will help you finance that. Just got to find them. But to me, as I've said, and I lived it, right? My time in North Dakota, living in Grand Forks, the city was about 65,000 to 70,000 people, metropolitan statistical area, right, the area around the city, about 100,000, which included East Grand Forks on the Minnesota side of the river. Interestingly enough, a very conservative member of the Democratic House got beat by the name of Colin Peterson there. And a great guy, Colin. And he's been, it's red country. You know, rural, outstate Minnesota. But Minnesota dominated by Twin Cities. Yep. all the votes down there. So anyway, yeah, it's this liberal city, but it's not. It's a farm state, Minnesota. And so it's a tale of two. New York, the same thing. New York, largely a small town state dominated by New York City. And so it goes across the nation. But that's the split, clearly. Urban values, rural, small town values. Two vastly different views of the nation. So that in the news. USNI News. The Quad kicks off Malabar 2020 exercise in the Bay of Bengal. So this is kind of interesting. Kind of an interesting story because we've been following this. The U.S., Japan, India, and Australian navies on Tuesdays kicked off the Malabar 2020 naval exercise in the Bay of Bengal, bringing the four nations together for the annual drill for the first time in over a decade. Arleigh Burke-class destroyer USS John McCain is partaking in the exercise on behalf of the United States. Quote, Malabar provides an opportunity for like-minded navies sharing a common vision of a more stable, open, and prosperous Indo-Pacific to operate and train alongside one another, said Commander Ryan Easterday, the McCain's commanding officer, in a statement. So anyway, what's more important than this is, one, that the nations would agree to it. And in particular, this is message sending to the Chinese. Three ships from the Indian Navy, a destroyer, a frigate, and a tanker are participating in the exercise, along with a submarine. The Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Force sent a destroyer. The Australian Navy has sent a frigate. So there you have it. So that's going on, and I think that's significant. And from what I've heard, that is only going to grow in the future. The Fat Leonard story remains in the news. This is by Gidget Fuentes, who we love. Retired Chief Petty Officer gets prison for continuing federal probe into the Fat Leonard Navy corruption scandal. Yeah. I mean, still. A federal judge issued a 27-month prison sentence for a retired sailor who pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit bribery in the ongoing investigation into the Glen Defense Marine Asia and Navy officials who served in the U.S. Pacific Fleet. Retired Chief Petty Officer Brooks Alonzo Parks, 48, of Upper Marlboro, Maryland, was also ordered by U.S. District Court Judge Janice San Martino to pay $25,000 in restitution. He retired in 2016, served as the logistics officer, the logistics lead petty officer on the U.S. 7th Fleet staff embarked on the USS Blue Ridge, and was actively involved in managing the 7th Fleet's logistics support budget, signing and processing invoices, and performing other supervisory logistics functions for the 7th Fleet. Parks was a first-class petty officer in 2006 when, according to court documents, he received complimentary hotel suites for his vacation, writing in an email, "Feels good living like a king as an E6. There were other bribes for himself and his friends. For 4 years, while he was aboard the Blue Ridge, Parks had expensive taste and wasn't restrained in demanding ever more luxuriant accommodations from Glen Marine. He demanded a $4,800 per night Ritz-Carlton suite in Singapore for he and his friends. For a port visit to Hong Kong, he demanded three suites at a five-star hotel for himself and specified, I'm wanting a presidential king suite, a five-star hotel. As Parks put it, Sad. Sad. That story still in the news. Here's another interesting story written by Megan Eckstein. Headline, two carrier fire drill trained sailors to avoid problems found in the early moments of the Bonhomme Richard fire. When the Bonhomme Richard caught fire at the pier over the summer, sailors from across the waterfront rushed to the scene, some in damage control teams from their own ships and some showing up as individuals who wanted to help. Through the five-day firefighting effort, though the five-day firefighting effort became very organized, the first minutes were confusing. It was a Sunday morning when most of the Bonhomme Richard crew and leadership were not around. A recent training exercise at the pier in Norfolk sought to address the challenges. Crew members of the John Stennis and the Gerald Ford participated in two in-port emergency teams training evaluations on October 24th and 26th to learn how not only to handle an emergency and incorporate help from civilian emergency responders, but also how to learn to integrate help from a nearby ship. So Navy trying to learn lessons learned. And so honestly, hats off to them for getting after that, because I don't believe that when that investigation gets revealed, it's going to be anything positive for the Navy. And as a service, the Navy needs some good news, right? Marine Corps Times. Article about, will the Marine Corps take on sub hunting? Okay, so I guess that would be our drones. It would be sub hunters. And that's about it for Marine Corps Times. Top stories in Early Bird, and then Chris Woodbridge will join us. Number one, Trump wins Florida, locked into other tight races with former Vice President Joe Biden. Two, generals privately brief news anchors, promise no military role in the election. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, held an off-the-record video call with top generals and network anchors this weekend to tamp down speculation about potential military involvement in the presidential election. You know, this is bullshit, right? This is just news networks that are looking for some... I mean, to me, it's nonsense, right? But, you know, it's, I guess it's what they do. I just think it's pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. And you know, one of the good things about this election is that the vast majority of the news media, the polling business, are nowhere near the American people. Yeah, I mean, and some glaring examples. The Washington Post, ABC poll last week had Wisconsin 17 points to Joe Biden. And we went to bed last night and Donald Trump was leading it with, you know, 80-something percent of the vote cast. Third story, former naval aviator and astronaut Mark Kelly, also the husband of former Representative Gabby Giffords, defeats Martha McSally to claim a Senate seat. Martha McSally appointed, defeated, and then reappointed to sit in the Senate, has never been elected to the Senate. So McSally, a retired Air Force colonel, lost the seat she was appointed to. Story number four, U.S. undertook cyber operation against Iran as part of an effort to secure the 2020 election. This is according to the Washington Post. U.S. Cyber Command and the National Security Agency have taken recent actions to ensure that foreign actors do not interfere in the 2020 election, including an operation in the past 2 weeks against Iran, U.S. officials said. Pretty interesting, eh? The move against Iranian hackers working for the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps came shortly after they launched an operation 2 weeks ago posing as a far-right group to send threatening emails to American voters and also posted a video aimed at driving down confidence in the voting process, said the officials who spoke on conditions of anonymity. So, again, at some point, the free nations of the world are going to have to sit down and reach some agreement on electronic interference. When does that become an act of war? Just because you do it electronically doesn't mean, you know, we're not at war with you. I think it does mean that. Anyway, the U.S. Congress notified of a drone sale to Taiwan. That according to the Pentagon. The State Department cleared the potential sale of four sophisticated U.S.-made aerial drones to Taiwan in a formal notification sent to Congress. The Pentagon said on Tuesday, the last step before finalizing the weapon sale that will further anger China. The $600 million deal would be the first such sale since U.S. policy on the export of the sophisticated and closely guarded drone technology was loosened by the Trump administration. So, yeah, haven't seen that from too many presidents. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Chris Woodbridge will join us. We'll talk to the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette. We'll get his thoughts on the election and some other stuff. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.